Hi, this is Jean Bruce Scott.
And Randy Reinholz.
And when we're not busily producing some of the most outstanding Native American theater in Los Angeles,
we always like to check out the best of British audio adventures with Alex Lefchuk and his team of the Midweek Drive.
And Midweek Drive morning editions on Siren FM.
And southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com.
Now, when you've been presenter of the year for the SCW Fitness Education Florida Conference, you also, in addition to that, have won the title of Fitness Idol after competing at the SCW Fitness Boston Marina Fitness Idol competition, and you're the state liaison for the Nutrition Entrepreneurs Dietetic Practice Group in Massachusetts from 2004 to 2015, you have earned your chops.
Thank you.
We're delighted there to, therefore to welcome to the program today the awesomely talented Tricia Silverman. How are you, Tricia?
I'm great. How are you, Alex?
Very good indeed. And we've also been joined from North Carolina by the socially distanced soul that is Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Good. How are you both?
Very good indeed. It is obviously sunny in North Carolina, which is great in the fall and all sorts of other areas. Tricia, actually, whereabouts are you at present?
I'm in Needham, Massachusetts. It's right outside of the Boston city.
Right. So kind of East Coast almost, pretty from that point of view. So no worries about the California Brexit and various other bits and pieces or Calaxit. We won't go there. Tricia, talk to us about this latest text that you've actually produced, which, again, as with all great texts, seems to be a mixture of common sense and sensibility and appropriateness in terms of how you can actually not only stay healthy, but also maintain that healthy attitude to life.
Well, thank you so much for asking. I wrote the book because I'm very fascinated by longevity, and I want to help people to live their longest lives possible, and not only live long lives, but be really super healthy, not have the Alzheimer's, dementia, the heart disease and cancer that you see a lot of people end up with. I want people to have robust, vibrant lives right up until the end. And there are cultures across the world that are known for longevity. So in my book, I wrote about habits that can help you to live long lives. So if you put these habits into place, the payoff are the healthy dividends. And that's really living a longer life, having less medication copays, and just feeling your best all along the way.
And of course, you mentioned longevity there, and pharmaceutical companies have made a great deal of money over the years in terms of looking for that. And maybe it's not the best way to actually go. There are other simpler routes, more natural routes, than actually saying, I just want some pills for that.
That is so true. One of the foods of longevity are beans and also nuts and seeds. So that if you're not eating beans or nuts and seeds, we want to think about getting more of these into our diet. And we want to replace some of the red meat that we're eating with beans. It's one of the best things that you can do is to get more plant food into your diet.
Which is good for the planet as well. Now, Jessica, I know you're a keen advocate for sweet tea. Heaven only knows what Trish is going to make of that, but what the heck. have you had a chance to have a look at some of Trish's work, and have you got any questions at this stage?
Yeah, I'm actually curious about what got you into this field. You seem very passionate about nutrition and lifestyle. So how did you get involved in this? Have you always been this into nutrition and healthiness?
Thank you, Jess. So when I grew up, my dad owned a deli, and in the deli was all kinds of food. And basically, I ate too much of it when I was a kid. And I wanted to figure out, well, how can I enjoy food, but not carry around a lot of extra weight? And my mom always had magazines around, like Prevention Magazine, and there were health books around. I was really fascinated by that, but I didn't quite understand as a kid, why was I overweight? Because we ate pretty healthy Monday through Friday, and then on Saturday and Sunday, we ate a lot of junky food. And I couldn't understand. So when I grew up, I decided, well, let me become a dietitian to learn more about what's going on with nutrition. And it was just fascinating to me. One of my biggest takeaways, what I realized is that even if you eat perfectly Monday through Friday, if you go off the rails on Saturday and Sunday, you tend to kind of gain that weight back. So when I work with clients, I talk to them about, you don't have to be perfect at all, but you really want to be careful during the weekends and not kind of go crazy with your food. Try to keep it pretty consistent, especially if you're looking for weight loss from the week to the weekend as well.
Yeah, I think that makes definite sense. I think it's a kind of whole thing. I think that, you know, it seems like you can't really go part way and expect everything to turn out perfectly. I think that makes complete sense. And how do you think people have been trying to balance this during quarantine? I think for a lot of people, you know, me included, it's like, even if we had healthy habits before, during quarantine, it kind of just went crazy. And we've been trying to get it back.
That's a great question, Jess. I think that we shouldn't be too hard on ourselves during quarantine, but we should try to make good choices and we should try to move more. We've become sedentary with the shutdowns, and it's a good idea to try to figure out ways to add movement back in. For instance, if I watch TV, I'm going to be doing yoga or lifting weights or doing crunches, you know, just some type of movement while I'm doing that. I actually have a bicycle that has a desk on it, so I like to do a lot of my work on the bicycle. And I think if you have a treadmill, if you can walk and read at the same time, multitasking your exercise can be really, really helpful. And then with your nutrition, because being obese is associated with worse outcomes with COVID, we want to be careful if we're carrying around extra weight and try to take steps to move your weight in the right direction. And again, we don't have to be perfect, but it's all about choices and the portions that we make. And, you know, the sweet tea Alex had mentioned earlier, that's something that sometimes if we drink too much sugary beverages, it makes us crave more sugary beverages. So I would think about cutting back on those. So let's say you do a sweet tea every day. Well, can you maybe start doing a sweet tea every other day? And then maybe we go to two a week, and then maybe it's once a week, and then maybe we keep it there, or we decide, you know what, my life is better without the sweet tea. And, you know, if it's not, we want to find ways to keep it in, but then maybe there's other sugary items that we can take out so that we balance our diets.
Mm-hmm. Leave the sweet tea alone, Jess. Leave the sweet tea alone.
I can't. I just can't. Never. I'm sorry. I'll have to limit myself. Try to get more just moderation. Need to remember moderation.
Moderation really is key. And with the sugar, it's not only about weight. Sugar affects your body from head to toe. In some studies, it's associated with lower brain volume. So if you want a really robust, strong, big, we all want a big brain. If you want a big brain, one way to get a big brain is fitness and moving our bodies. Sugar works in the opposite way. It may be decreasing brain volume, particularly in the hippocampus area of your brain. And that's an important structure for memory. So as we age, we want to, you know, lower the sugar for our brains, but also sugar raises your blood pressure and triglycerides. It's associated with diabetes. It's associated with the metabolic syndrome, which is a pre-heart disease, pre-diabetes type of syndrome. It's also associated with gout. So we want to think of ways to cut back just for overall good health and to live that really long, healthy life.
Clearly, Jessica, this is a tough love that you're receiving at present.
So
that's the important one. Actually, on a related note, one of our regular nutritional experts who joins us from the pharmaceutical industry, although he's a practicing chemist, Dennis Gore, he has the line that sugar is the new nicotine, insofar as actually it is, you know, impacting so much, as you said, Tricia, in terms of our overall lifestyle, that, you know, in essence, you do need to step away from it, and it is addictive.
It is. It is for many people. I find many people are very sensitive to it, and some people more sensitive than others. I'm one of those people. I have to be careful. If I have a little bit of Halloween candy, I want a lot of Halloween candy. And, you know, many people are like that. And he's so right. It is like the new nicotine. And being sedentary is also like a nicotine, too. Both of those together really not great for us. So I'm not saying you can never have a treat, you can never have an ice cream, but most of the time it's good to keep your added sugar intake really low. And I'm not talking about the sugar in fruit. Fruit is good for you, especially during this time. Your vegetables and fruit are so important for protection for your immune system. And when we talk about fruit, there's some fruit in particular, apples and lemons come up as being very helpful for lung function. So those might be some to think about, you know, get that apple in, squeeze a little lemon in your water. That can be really very helpful.
Personally, Trisha, I'm a great fan of both coenzyme Q10 and indeed selenium and zinc as a way to actually sort of add those nutritional supplements, especially when you bear in mind, certainly at least in Britain, that our levels of selenium in the soil are some of the lowest in the world, and it is problematic from that point of view.
Interesting. Another great source of selenium is Brazil nuts, and just a couple of them, you get a whopping amount. You don't need too much selenium, but you don't want to be deficient. So a deficiency is associated with depression. So Brazil nuts are feel-good foods. Another feel-good food is foods that have folate. So if you hear the word folate, you think of the word foliage, leaves, and leafy greens have a great amount of folate. So I look at leafy greens, salads, as feel-good foods. So if you want to, you know, a lot of people are getting down in the dumps now with, you know, being home so much. Well, eating can help to lift your mood if we eat the right foods, and leafy greens are really good for that. So whether you put, you know, spinach in a smoothie or you have a nice salad with lunch and dinner, it's going to really to contribute to feeling good.
We could also go on to talk about pycnogenol, but perhaps we won't at this stage because that might be going into details too far, but that's another line. However, let's look at obviously your nutrition staircase and, of course, the classic Nutritious Way of Eating. I see what you did there, Trish. Nutritious Way of Eating. Nice one.
Yeah, I put my name in there.
Exactly. So was this something that's been years in gestation? I mean, I can't believe this is the first official book that you've actually put together in terms of healthy dividends. Was this something that you kind of had already, it had been percolating for some time?
It had been percolating, Alex, for many, many years. And it felt so good. It was like I gave birth to a baby. I finally got the baby out. but it was... It's really many years. It's over 20 years worth of my work, and even insights from before that, from when I was a kid and a teenager. That's all put in this book. It was a labor of love for sure. And the staircase that you mentioned, the way I look at eating and when I get new clients is that we're all on a nutrition staircase, and some people might be at the low end of the staircase if they're eating a lot of drinking soda, and are they eating, you know, white bread and crackers and cookies and ice cream, a lot of that stuff, and maybe not a lot
kind
of vegetables.
Diet, basically, in many ways, an undergraduate student's diet.
Yeah, it's funny, yeah. And if students ate better, they would actually think better and do better on their tests. But then we can take a step up. So if we were having white bread, then maybe we go to a whole grain bread. And that's a step up. And then maybe another step up is that we go organic in our bread. And then maybe another step up is we start making different kinds of recipes. So I look at nutrition as different steps of a staircase, and the staircase never ends. Because even as a nutritionist, I can learn about more cultures, try new recipes, keep my ear to the research. So that staircase is always there. And wherever we are, we can always take another step up. And I look at it as a fun thing because it's about learning and about making our bodies feel really good. We, you know, there's one thing that we have that no one can take away, and that's our bodies. So we want to treat our bodies really well. Your body is the one thing you take with you throughout your life right to the end. So we want to treat it really well and be kind to it.
Read lots of reports, Tricia, that nutritionists at one level actually maintain that because the human body is so adept and skillful in kind of looking after itself, that if we actually give it the right fuel, actually the average lifespan could be 110, 120 years of age, that actually this whole notion of 70 years and 10 and that's it, it's all over, might actually be an area. I mean, of course, we're talking quality of life as well, which is
right.
Clearly at the impact in terms of how you feel.
Yeah, the oldest living person was from France. She lived until 122. Her name was Jean Calment. Right now, there's a woman from Japan. She is 117. If she makes it to 118 in January, she'll be the third person to make it to 118 ever. So I follow the oldest living people in the world. I've been doing this since 2010. And it's fascinating to see why they're living so long. Many of them ate really healthy, but spirituality is another factor in longevity that I see as well. It's interesting to see. And also trying to keep your stress level really low is important. We all have stress, but it's how we deal with it, how we cope with it, how resilient we are, how much we are able to bounce back. And, you know, this is that time. It's, you know, a test for that, you know, about bouncing back and just trying to keep that stress level really low. And that all feeds into good nutrition, because if you meditate and you do yoga it can really help you to feel better so that you're more in tune with your body and how it feels when you eat good foods versus when you eat foods that aren't so great for you.
So there you are, Jessica. Give up the sweet tea, and you can actually be doing a feature on this in 2120, 100 years from now.
I will be a changed person. I'll be back.
vision boards are also mentioned, Trish. I mean, that's something which, again, has kind of been echoed through a number of motivation coaches and things. Just actually kind of visualizing where you want to go, how you want to develop it. Is that also something that can actually help take those baby steps? Because I'm sure there are one or two people listening to this say, I can't do that. I mean, Trish is a superwoman. She's got sort of exercise bikes. She's got all this, etc. It is important to actually say, you know, small steps at a time to make those improvements, presumably.
Vision boards are so key, Alex. My vision board helped me so much. And I was teaching a class for a local school district, and they asked me to be at a health fair and talk about vision boards. And I made a vision. I used to just draw pictures of what I wanted in my future. And I finally decided, let me make a vision board. And that vision board, most of those things have come true. And it's shocking to me, but I strongly believe in visualizing what you want in your future. It helps your brain see what you want, and then it makes it easier to get there. So and you want to think about, sometimes people think of a vision board as, oh, I'll put $1 million on there and a boat. And there's more to it than that. You can put material things for sure, but we want to think about, where do we want our relationships going? Where do we want our finances going? Where do we want our nutrition going? What career goals do we want? So we want to put, what family goals do we want? And you can put those all on there. You can even have separate vision boards, a vision board for the family. But it's really important to think about doing that and think about the different aspects in your lives, what you want from that. And it's these things do manifest once we put them on that board, and then to revisit that board periodically. Also, you don't want to make the board too cluttered, because we don't want to invite clutter into our lifestyle. So we want to keep it clear and have fun with it. Go through magazines, print off pictures of what you want in your future. I put book on my vision board, and now I have a book. I put yoga certification on there, and I'm almost finished with my yoga certification. So it's I find that it's super helpful, and I highly recommend that people make vision boards.
Well, to quote from our regular Florida correspondent and inspirational life coach, Mike Dooley, thoughts become things, choose the good ones. Classic.
Yeah.
Jessica, any other questions or queries you got?
Yeah, so I was actually going to say, it reminded me when I was in Lincoln for school.
That's
I remember,
England, by the way, Tricia, not Nebraska. Just in case.
Okay, we have a Lincoln here in Massachusetts too.
Okay.
You know, is it Lincoln, Massachusetts?
Yeah, I was over there at Lincoln studying, and I remember I was trying to cut back on sugar, and my way of doing that was just quitting it cold turkey. But then I would end up binging on sugar. I would I still have the memory of going to Tesco's at like 11 at night and then getting a whole packet of like digestives because I hadn't had sugar in so long, and just eating like all of it at like 2 a.m. So I'm wondering, do you often find that people like misunderstand, you know, how to approach nutrition at the beginning, kind of like I did, where they kind of have little bumps on the way? Like, what are some common misconceptions people have about that?
Yes, I think what you went through is so normal, especially during college years when you leave the home and you're trying different things, and then you hear what other people are doing and you think that, you know, may be the right way to go. And for some people, cold turkey on things can work really well, and for other people, baby steps. And maybe for you, that was a lesson learned, that your cravings were so strong. What some people found healthy is just to keep a lot of fruit around, because fruit has natural sweetness, so reach for fruit when you're craving something sweet. And then, you know, if you're really craving something, sometimes it's okay to have a little bit of that item. And the key then is to sort of move on and not turn it into, well, I had, you know, some ice cream, now I'm going to have a cake and chips and everything else too. And then I'll, you know, it's Friday, I'll wait till Monday to get back on a diet. And not that it has to be a diet, but just make your next meal or snack really healthy. And it's a different way of thinking. So it's not all or nothing, like, oh, I blew it, so I might as well just go off track and eat really junky the rest of the weekend. But oops, you know, I had a little bit too much sugar here. Okay, the next meal or snack, I'm going to have some vegetables and a good source of protein and, you know, healthy food to make me feel good.
Yeah, I think that makes sense with, you know, I think a lot of people experience guilt when we kind of slip up when we're trying to stick to a food regime.
That's so true, Jess. And one of the things that I've learned that's pretty big here, I think it's growing in our country, is self-compassion. And that's treating yourself as you would a friend. So if you did go to that store and got some things that you normally wouldn't do, that you realize, oh, other people have been through this before. I'm not alone in this. I'm going to be kind to myself. I'm not going to beat myself up over it. And I'm going to move on.
And I was going to ask a little bit off track, but still, it says in your book that you talk about sleep, and I think sleep is another thing that has gone a little haywire for a lot of us during quarantine. So yeah. what are some tips that you have for getting, you know, full nights, healthy sleep?
That's a really great question. So a balanced diet and a diet with variety and staying hydrated, that's one aspect that can be helpful. Also, following a Mediterranean style diet is associated with less insomnia. And what does that mean? Well, lots of vegetables and fruit, whole grains, beans, nuts and seeds, some fish, some chicken and turkey. And the foundation, vegetables and fruit, really important. Now, other things for sleep, try to get to bed the same time each night. Aimed for 7 to 9 hours. If you're mid-60s and older, it's about 7 to 8 hours a night is optimal. And then we want to think about an hour before bed to dim your lights and try to shut off your electronics. And that when we have too much electronics going on, that blue light can be very stimulating. So we want to try to, you know, pare things down. And then during the day, we do want to go out and get some bright sunlight, because that can help you to make melatonin so that you sleep better a little bit later on. If you do caffeine, cut it off by 2 p.m. And for some people, it may be 12 p.m. And for others, it may be 10 a.m. or it may not be good to have it at all. I'm one of those people, very sensitive to caffeine. I do better without it. Exercise can be good. If exercise is keeping you up, do it a little bit earlier in the day. And then if you drink alcohol, you want to cut it off 3 hours before bed. Alcohol interferes with the restorative function of sleep. So it's good to, you know, cut it off and try to, you know, cut back on the alcohol if possible. But those are some, you know, key sleep, I call it sleep hygiene tips, and that means sleep habits basically.
I'm probably Thank echoing you. Stephanie Romaszewski's line, our sleep specialist who has advised NASA in the past, don't beat yourself up if you don't manage to get 5 or 6 hours, because that's the other thing. You start worrying about not getting enough sleep, and therefore it becomes a vicious circle.
That, Alex, that's so true. Yeah. And even with nutrition too, don't beat yourself up. Just try to do the best you can do. You don't have to be perfect about it. Another thing that can help with sleep is meditation. And there are apps out there. One in the U.S. is, and it may be available in the U.K. It's Insight Timer. And with that app, you can search the word sleep, and then all these free sleep meditations come up. And I've found it to work like a charm.
From the point of view of this particular sequence, Healthy Dividends is the title of the text you need to actually work for, and indeed access, hoping to live a long, flourishing life. And you will. Alternatively, presumably, Tricia, you can go to TriciaSilverman.com.
Yes, that's a great place to find me, TriciaSilverman.com. And my book is available on Amazon.
It's a win-win situation, certainly. And the two final questions are, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today? Has it been good for you?
This has been so wonderful and exciting, and I'm really happy to be here. So thank you both for having me. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Alex. It's fun to get on Zoom. It's really nice to see people, and it's really great to connect outside of my own hometown. So I love Zoom. It's the silver lining of what's going on.
A COVID dividend, perhaps. Jessica, what's the next question that we should deliver at this stage?
Yeah, Tricia, will you be joining us again?
I would love to join you again. This was so much fun. Please invite me, you know, whenever you need a guest, I'd love to be back. If anyone ever cancels on you, just, you know, I'm always around. So, you know, it'd be great to come back. It was really delightful to chat with you both.
They say virtual and live nutrition speaker, wellness educator and author, Tricia Silverman Wellness. Look, it's even on my screen right in front of me here. It's great stuff.
Fun. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Huge thanks to you both. Thank you. Thank you both. Stay healthy and happy. Thank you.
Well, if you look back over time, in 1852, the post box was launched. In 1861, the first modern mail order company was established. And in 1883, Parcel Post was launched. And indeed, exciting news for the 21st century in 2020, because Royal Mail are actually going back to parcels and a whole new way to actually deal with parcel post boxes and so on. An initiative that's going to be discussed now by the head of campaigns at Royal Mail, the wonderful Mark Street. How are you, Mark?
Very well. Thanks very much for having me on the show.
Royal Mail has a long and distinguished history and has been responsible for so many things over the years. I know I still speak to people who say, remember the days when we used to receive the post at 8 a.m. in the morning, and then we had a second post about 11 or 12. But gradually, slowly but surely, it seems as though there are lots of innovations coming through in terms of what's happening with the Royal Mail. And this seems to be another step in that right direction, doesn't it?
Well, we hope so. And you know, you yourself touched upon some of the milestones there, which the company has achieved. You know, it's a very old company, as you say. We're 500 years old. You know, there was a time when the penny black was almost the equivalent of internet technology in terms of being able to put people in touch with one another. And what we've seen recently, you know, talking about the internet, is this incredible change in how we're all shopping online more and more. And this was really accelerated by lockdown, where we've seen even more people do online shopping. So we're naturally evolving our network. And probably the most visible way of that is what we're announcing today. The normal old everyday delivery, everyday round, is now going to be collect as well as delivery.
Which is obviously excellent stuff from that point of view. Now, Parcel Collect, of course, was one of the key elements that was launched with respect to certain postcode areas of West England. That seemed to go well. Is this a case of building on the foundations left by Parcel Collect?
Exactly right. So we did a soft launch in the West Country in Bristol. And, you know, the report from our people and from customers was that they really liked it, you know, and the service itself, it's kind of got two real benefits. I think lockdown has given us all a sense of what it's like to be confined to quarters, and it's not very nice. And for some people, you know, that's just an everyday reality. If they're vulnerable, disabled, you know, maybe not able to get out so easily. And so this is a great service for them. But also, you know, we're all time poor these days. We're all looking to get more time back. And with online shopping, you know, the returns can be quite inconvenient. So it's very much geared to be able to send returns back too. You know, these are those, maybe your trousers were too big or not big enough after lockdown eating. And you need to send this back. So it comes in a pre-paid envelope. And this is really an ideal way to use the service.
You know, certainly I think most of us have had the experience when going to the post office of waiting behind somebody who effectively has got about 700 or 800, it would seem, probably just 7 or 8 parcels that they want to actually send through eBay or indeed other online packages, Amazon and so on and so forth. This actually really means that folk don't need to actually make that journey. They can actually, for indeed 60 pence per item, actually have prepaid return items picked up as well from Parcel Collect.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And remember, another example of this change that we're making towards parcels, a parcel-led company, was also the introduction of parcel postboxes, which we brought in a year ago. You know, that was unheard of previously as well. But these are postboxes that are designed to put your parcels in as well as, you know, alongside our letterboxes. But of course, you know, we're not looking to supplant post office. Post office offers an amazing array of services, lots of Royal Mail services. And it's really not meant to sort of, you know, stop people going there. But it's just in those instances where you perhaps need something a little bit, you know, more conveniently or unable to get out for whatever reason. It's more designed to complement those services.
Absolutely. And of course, it's great to go to the post office to actually collect parcels. It's just when you're actually sort of putting them into the parcel post, you think this could be another step forward. We mentioned obviously the cost in terms of prepaid return items, but even in terms of actually having a parcel collected from either the door of a customer or indeed nominated safe place, 72 pence, very competitively priced, I think, Mark.
Well, we hope so. And to be clear, that's a fee. The postage is still on top of that. So it's up to people. You know, we're all about giving customers choice. And as I mentioned, you know, we've got an unrivaled network with post office. We've got our letterboxes. We've got our parcel post boxes. So really, this is like another option to give people to make sure that they have as convenient a service that fits in with their lifestyles, whatever that lifestyle may be, as we can.
Somewhere in the very near future, it would seem, we're going to be faced with drones. Are the Royal Mail ahead of the game with respect to that? Are you already sort of piloting various drone messages and indeed drone technologies to maybe actually deliver and pick up parcels as well?
Well, drones are a very interesting development. You know, I mean, for the time being, we're looking at using our network, not quite exciting, but, you know, really the 120,000 postmen and postwomen who are at the heart of communities across the UK. I think that the special relationship between customers and our postman and postwoman really grew during that time. And I think that our people are one of our greatest assets. So, you know, this is an example of us using the existing network in an innovative way. It doesn't have the whiz and bangs, but it actually could mean a lot to people on a day-to-day basis. And of course, it's starting now and it's here, which I guess is the big difference there.
Absolutely. And 44% have already stated that they're likely to use this home collection service. So it's good news. Mark, people probably got some general ideas from what we've been chatting about over the last few moments, but where would you point folk to actually find out further details about Royal Mail's parcel collect service?
Well, yeah, all people need to do is go to royalmail.com/book collection and they'll find all the details of how you can book one of these slots. Up to 5 days in advance, is up to 5 items per address per day. And hopefully it should all be clear from there.
Fantastic. Mark Street, Head of Campaigns at Royal Mail. Happy posting and collecting, Mark.
Thank you, sir. You as well.
43%. 43% of parents-to-be admit their social media feeds inspire them to push the boat out with prenatal events. And something which used to be very much, I think, seen as an American aspect, the baby shower is very much coming to the fore here. And who better to talk about baby showers and more than a double dynamic duo of fantastic folk. First of all, celebrity events planner extraordinaire, it's Crystal De Gale. How are you, Crystal?
Hello, how are you?
Fantastic. And Director of Savings and Investments from Barclays, of course, Claire Francis. How are you, Claire?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Very good indeed. Claire, this research, which obviously Barclays is responsible for, does suggest that when it comes to that baby shower, I mean, 59% going for big buffets, cupcake towers. That's something I must admit, which is out of my comfort zone in all sorts of ways, wasn't it? And balloon decorations also top the list of must-haves. I mean, is the baby shower effectively, it's almost become as critical as the christening, as the festive gifts, all those sort of things, really?
Yeah, I think they're becoming sort of popular and big business in a way. And I think we found that people are spending an average of £406 sort of putting on a baby shower for their sort of impending arrival. And often they say that they're influenced and inspired by what they're seeing on social media, on particularly on Instagram, and they're seeing photographs of other people's baby showers, which is what they're trying to sort of replicate themselves. And I think, you know, and it's great. And particularly at the moment, there's not a huge amount to look forward to in the current situation that we're living through. So if we can celebrate, you know, and there's no better thing to celebrate than a new baby on its way, great. But equally, I think what we want to sort of say to people is don't feel pressured to do so and be spending more than you can comfortably afford. So, you know, great to have the celebration and the party, but you can do it without you know, without adding financial stress to your life, and you can do it cheaper than some of these sort of really extravagant, fantastic ones that you can often see on social media. And yours can just be just as good, but a fraction of the price.
So you mean the whole notion of exploding blue bombs for boys and pink bombs for girls, all of that kind of material is not necessarily essential to the whole process, shall we say? Let's turn to Crystal. Crystal, you're events planner, celebrity events planner at Before Baby, and presumably you're used to all sorts of mega scenarios working through on this basis. But what Claire's just been saying there, is it a case of actually you can work within a budget and actually still produce something which is really effective?
Yes, definitely you can. I mean, some of the obvious celebrity clients that we go for want something very, very big and extravagant. But what I can say from looking at the kind of trends going on at the moment is that you can actually have something that's just as fantastic but on a budget. You can kind of just, you know, look at kind of your own finances, etc., and kind of plan to have something that will still have the wow factor, but particularly at the moment, because of the kind of situation with people not being able to get together as they would like to, you can take that opportunity and kind of use it to your advantage and plan something much smaller and kind of just go into the real detail of it and have something that's really much more personal.
I see that baby showers bring the expectation of a gift, with 42% of future parents revealing that the presents they expected to receive for their upcoming arrival made the cost worthwhile. So is it an investment, Claire? I mean, is it a case of, you know, we'll put out the baby shower and then actually what we put out we'll get back and so on?
Well, I don't think many people, you know, I don't think that's necessarily the reason for having a baby shower. Although if you're invited to a baby shower, I think a lot of people would want to take a gift or send a gift if it's a virtual baby shower, as I think a lot of them are at the moment due to lockdown. But I think, you know, again, that can be helpful because, as any parent will know, babies are expensive and they need a lot of things. And, you know, prams and cots and all the things that you need for newborns, you know, can really add up. So, and if you're having a baby shower and people want to buy a gift, it could be great as a parent to either sort of suggest some things that you perhaps need for the baby, or as a guest, actually, rather than just buy something for the sake of it, speak to your friend or family member who's expecting and see if there's anything that they do need that would be helpful, so that the gift that you give them is one that will absolutely be used and valued and really help them out.
Crystal, clearly you've had lots of experience of doing major baby showers, etc. Clearly the names will be changed or adjusted to protect the innocent and so on. But what's been the craziest request that you've actually had and you've had to sort of say to your client, not really sure about this?
You know, you'd be surprised that I don't find the kind of requests are particularly crazy. I think it's just on the extravagance of the decorations. So I think one of our biggest baby showers that we did was when a client kind of wanted a fairground wheel in their back garden and a full-on funfair theme. And we thought that was kind of just, it was really, really extravagant and over the top. But it was actually wonderful on the day. They had makeovers going on. They had spa treatments. So it was the whole shebang, really. But generally, we do find sometimes there's a little bit of pressure because obviously mums to be at that point in time during their pregnancy, sometimes they can be very, very focused on the planning, just like a bride would be before their wedding. And you do get some kind of unusual last minute requests and lots of panicking, but nothing too unusual, I would say.
Well, I've often said that parents are very difficult to bring into the world, so that's another line entirely, but we'll motor on from that. Claire, is it all about the planning? I mean, from the financial point of view, is it a case of you set a budget, you work within that, and therefore you'll minimise the stress?
I think so. And it's sort of, you know, social media is great for ideas, but it can also add pressure to people and they feel that they've got to sort of keep up with the Joneses. And I think it's sort of, don't feel pressured by that, you know, work out what you can afford, what's comfortable for you, and do budgeting and recognise the fact that when there's a baby coming, you know, your household expenditure is going to change. So there's an outlay at the start to get all the things that you need, like the prams and car seats and things like that. But there's an ongoing cost and the child's a long-term investment. So just prepare for that. And the more budgeting that you can do and financial preparation, the better. And I think particularly at the moment with a lot of job uncertainty for a lot of people, you know, it's really important to spend that time, and there's tools online that can help you. Also at Barclays, we offer a service that's available to anybody, not just Barclays customers, called Money Mentors. And if you're struggling and don't quite know how to sort of tackle it yourself and tackle your sort of financial management, you can make an appointment with one of them online and they can help you out. But yeah, it's sort of, it's worth doing that budgeting, not just for the baby shower, but also for sort of life with the baby, and just sort of get yourself prepared. And if you can have a baby shower before they arrive and have a bit of a party, even if it's over Zoom with your friends and family at the moment because you can't meet in person, then I think that's a really lovely thing to do, but don't overstretch yourself to do it.
Well, there we are. And presumably the factors will increase if you're having twins, triplets, or indeed quads, etc. Oh, no. Multiply the whole thing up on that system. Crystal, sort of final line from yourself. In terms of the social media, you got your Instagram, you got your TikTok, you got your Twitter. Is there a particular favorite? I mean, is Instagram basically the lead in this side of things? Or is it just a case of, no, I still prefer FaceTime on Facebook?
Well, no, I think Instagram is kind of leading on these things, because I think that the kind of the detail that everyone's going to in terms of decoration, just those kind of really, really small details, you can see better because it's a visual medium. So I think it's basically the Instagram is kind of taking over. But we are seeing wonderful things on TikTok and lots of people doing really nice, funny things that are really catching the eye on TikToks, etc. And Facebook stories, etc.
It just opens up a whole new world. And finally, Claire, where is the best place to go to for this online advice to actually, again, receive the wisdom of Barclays and more?
So if you go to barclays.co.uk/moneymentors, that's where you can find out more about the Money Mentors service and you can book an appointment. And we've also got a Money Worries Hub on our website as well that's got lots of information aimed at sort of budgeting tips, savings tips, how to get into that sort of savings habit as well. So there's lots of advice on our website.
Fantastic. Our celebrity events planner, Crystal De Gale. Not to be confused, of course, with country singer Crystal Gale, who once had a hit with Don't It Make Your Brown Eyes Blue. I don't know whether that's why you put the duh in there, just to sort of say, no, I don't do country music. I plan weddings and so on. Crystal De Gale, celebrity events planner, and Claire Francis, Director of Savings and Investments at Barclays. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And happy showering, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Geometry. Differentiating from first principles, trigonometry, arithmetic, algebra. Do those words actually put the fear of the Almighty into you? Well, maybe. Because it's all about the math. And indeed, recent research has suggested that there's a large lack of mathematical confidence in mums and carers. Now, to actually deal with how low maths confidence can actually be addressed, and hopefully a newly confident generation of maths fans can be developed who find maths fun over the course of the next 10 minutes or 600 seconds, we're delighted to actually welcome two fabulous individuals. First of all, television presenter extraordinaire and mum of two, of course, the fabulous Angelica Bell. How are you, Angelica?
Very well, thank you. Good to be here speaking to you.
Exactly. It's just magic. And of course, from Maths on Toast, I'll say that again, it just impressed me so much. Maths on Toast, the Chief Executive Officer, Lucy Davis. How are you, Lucy?
I'm very well, thank you.
Angelica, can we cover your story initially? Because obviously, as a mum, clearly you want to transmit the fact that you are the source of old knowledge and things for your children. But when we start talking about homeschooling, which of course we've all been at, or many of us have actually experienced over the last few months and so on, those digits and numbers, I mean, I go back to my own experiences with Cuisenaire odds long before you were ever actually there. And somehow it takes a long time before you actually get it.
No, you're so right. And I think that's what's important about this, what we're doing with Numerize, is to make sure that parents, mums, especially mums, because 2/3 of mums said they lack confidence in maths, and particularly because they were, you know, leading homeschooling, is that we don't want anyone to feel that they can't do it or they're not intelligent or anything, but it's something that we can all overcome. And build up confidence, because it is quite daunting when all of a sudden life changes. You've got loads of things to juggle. And then next thing, you're having to sit down and work out math problems with your children. And you don't want to be wrong. You don't want them to see that you can't do it. So that will make you feel a little bit on edge, and lack that confidence that you were talking about. And this is what it's about. It's about empowering mums and families, carers, those who look after their children, and make them think, actually, you can do this. And we need to look at how maths can be applied to everyday life, not just for sitting exams.
I mean, certainly actually being numerate is critical in so many ways. If I can turn to Lucy, in terms of obviously Maths on Toast, I mean, that's part of a sort of ongoing structure, which, as you say, is connected with Numerize, a personalised home learning maths project for 10 to 16-year-olds. I mean, some of the numbers here are very impressive. 38,000 handwritten questions, 9,000 video tutorials. But what would you say, Lucy, to somebody who actually suddenly those numbers themselves, it's a bit like looking at the charts that we see delivered at 10 Downing Street. We say, yes, but what does it mean?
What I would say, and it kind of ties into Angelica's point, is that with maths, people often think it all is very much just about the maths. And as a parent, you can't help unless you know all of the maths. And if you've had a negative experience of maths at school, which many people have had, because a lot of maths is taught or was traditionally taught in a very performance related way, right or wrong answer, give me that answer quick. If you're somebody who needs time to work out the maths and to explore the maths, actually that's setting you up to be a far more able mathematician, to take time to try it again, to make mistakes, practice. But as a parent, you often haven't had those experiences. And so I would say it's all about the confidence. And so you say, what does it all mean? How do I interpret it? First of all, you just have to, the actual maths, unpick it. But approaching it as a parent, you have to make sure your attitude towards maths is right. Angelica said, people, you think, oh, that's it, you're the parent, you want the child to think you know everything. But I think it was you that said that, Alex. Actually, it's very important as a parent to say, do you know what, I don't know that, and I don't know how to do that. Let's work it out together. And so if you could build the confidence that it's fine to admit you're wrong in maths, that it's fine to take time to explore it, to try a different way, it's fine to make mistakes, get it wrong, and then practice again, then that is the best approach to helping your children and supporting your children through their maths journey. And the other point is, the younger you do it, the better it is. You've got all those positive experiences and family memories that can help you as a parent change your attitude, but will also instill that love of maths, that enjoyment, that positive attitude, that confidence right from the beginning.
I think it was Albert Einstein who actually said that mathematics is the language in which God has written the universe. The point being, Einstein was also fairly challenged by maths back in his early days. I mean, Angelica, from your own point of view, not that I'm asking you to do the theory of relativity, but feel free to do so, what have you actually gained from actually reconnecting with mathematics over your sort of homeschooling experiences recently?
Yeah, no, exactly. When I was young, I just couldn't work out maths. It was something that it was gave me a mind block, and I thought I couldn't do it, and I wasn't bright enough. And I did have extra math lessons. I think it's for a term. I used to go for Saturday mornings, and the teacher there just really helped me engage with it. And I wasn't in an environment where there were so many children, and I was afraid to say, "Oh, can I have some help?" or "I don't understand," because sometimes that is a barrier, and it's not because you know your friends necessarily mocking you, but it is, you know, children are young, they're sensitive, they don't want to stand out or you know, be made fun of if that's what happens. So once I'd got over that and that barrier, I loved it. Maths became one of my favorite subjects, and I loved it. I loved sitting down and working it through. I think working through problems is something that we always have to do. That sort of process is what we can apply to in life. And right. You're right, it's not about necessarily getting the right answer, but it is about working through it. And that's what I did with my children. Sometimes I would say, look, I'm not sure how to do this, let's work it out. Or I'd let them try and explain it to me to empower them, so they thought they were in control, and they then wanted to make sure they got the right answer or did the work. So it was, homeschooling was really empowering for them and for me, because it made me tap into numbers and processes I hadn't used in years and years, and made me feel confident about myself. Mm. About now, I was thinking, actually, I can do this. So yes. I do totally agree. It is a process of working it through, and that positive mental attitude. If you can, again, you know, if you can give out positivity in any walk of life, it inspires other people. And that's what Numerize is about, just that inspiring parent, inspiring a new generation of maths, maths converts and young people who want to engage in it, and provide information, these video and resources, and also how practice matters in maths. And that's what you can get from this platform.
Absolutely. And it's not just youngsters who feel embarrassed. I mean, I'm constantly saying to my students who are in the late teens and 20s that actually there's no such thing as silly questions, just ask. Yeah. Even more so these days. Lucy, I must admit, the one aspect of mathematics that I really hated, even though I did do pure maths and statistics at A level, was geometry. I just never got my heads around that. Do people have different sort of strengths and weaknesses? Are some people more good at arithmetic when it comes to actually proving the angles of an isosceles triangle actually add up to various other things? You might as well sort of be speaking a completely different language.
Well, I think what's interesting is that most people do think of maths as just numbers. Angelica said there, where she said blah, 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 and exploring and numbers. And maths is so much more than numbers. And you're making that point about geometry is very, very important, because we have very rigid definitions of maths. We first of all think there just has to be an answer, right or wrong, whereas actually exploring the maths, trying out the different ways of getting to an answer, whether that's a numerical answer or whether it's geometry, spatial maths, which is all about shape, space, and measure. And these are very important points to take on. But maths is far more than just numbers. Maths is, we're surrounded by maths. Much of what we do every day is maths. And it's the discoveries that have been made by mathematicians over the years took them an incredibly long time to get to them. And yet when we get to school, we're expected to actually learn them very quickly. So I think the point about the different people learn maths in different ways, and that is very true. And rather than just having one set way, a good mathematician is actually somebody who can find the different ways of working it out. I'm the daughter of a maths teacher, and I was always told that the working out is just as valuable, and actually in tests in secondary level maths will get you often as many points as the correct answer. Because if you make a slight miscalculation with the actual answer, if you've shown your workings out, then you've shown you know the process of how to get there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Archimedes and Euclid will be looking down on us saying, that's right, they're getting it right. Lucy's spot on. Very briefly, Lucy, where can people go to find out more details about Maths on Toast?
So Maths on Toast, you go to www.mathsontoast.org.uk. We are a charity, and our mission is to help families with children from aged 4 to 12 learn to love maths, engage with maths, be inspired by maths, and see that maths is all around them in their everyday. And we use creative, hands-on, crafty activities, puzzles and games that shows that maths is so much more than the things you often think it is. And you can build your confidence and your love of maths, and then you are far more able to then approach the much more difficult concepts of maths, which you will come to when you are at secondary level.
And if you add a little soupçon of Angelica Bell positivity, then I think the solution is going to be wonderful. Angelica Bell, television presenter extraordinaire, and of course number two, and Lucy Davis, chief executive officer of Maths on Toast. Huge thanks. I think we managed to do it within about 600 seconds or thereabouts. Keep on keeping on, and happy mathematical work, folks.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.